NOM Update News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur, and it's 9:02. The town of Stebbins is still struggling to recover from a storm that ruined homes, roads, subsistence equipment, and vital infrastructure. A week and a half ago, a storm surge carried rushing water hundreds of yards from the beach through homes and roads. Drying racks, smokehouses, boats, steam rooms, and several houses near the shore were damaged and destroyed. While Kotlik and Unalakleet have received attention from statewide media and government, residents of Stebbins felt they had been largely ignored. With GCI and Tel-Alaska equipment damaged during the storm, there were few ways for residents in Stebbins to make contact with people outside of town. Yesterday, Kowarik chartered a plane to bring in personnel to assess damages and to consult with residents on ways of offering assistance. Kowarik President Melanie Banky and State Senator Donnie Olson were accompanied by staffers. A deputy commissioner from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs came as well. That's the agency acting to coordinate the state's relief efforts with Red Cross workers on the ground in areas hit by the storm. During a community meeting held in the Stebbins Elementary School, residents were advised to report all the vital property that was affected, from home flooding to subsistence fishing nets to the Red Cross. Melanie Banky echoed that in order for Kowarik to assist residents, they should first meet with Red Cross workers staying in Stebbins. Anna Neshonuk works as the tribal family coordinator for Kowarik and lives in Stebbins. She says that since homes were flooded, they've also become frozen. Her concern is getting people warm.
The first thing that I'm concerned about is the heating of homes that were damaged. How are we going to get monitors or wood stoves out here to Stebbins to thaw out the homes that were damaged?
The community also needs electricians and carpenters to ensure installations and wiring are safe. And while the state will eventually be able to provide new heating units, in the meantime, many families who lost their possessions during the storm are without cold weather gear.
I've made it a priority for the families who lost everything in their homes that they come up and get the first choice of the things they need. So they've gotten everything they needed except they're requesting boots and snow pants, warm gear. The main request is blankets, warm blankets, shoes, shoe packs, and towels.
The freeze is making many aspects of the cleanup effort more difficult. Several large containers used to collect sewage from household honey buckets were toppled or carried away. Frozen and covered with snow, that raw sewage could become hazardous when the ground thaws in the spring. According to speakers and community officials at Tuesday's meeting, Stebbins was saved by how completely residents came together to help one another. Amid Saturday's night's storm, there were small acts of consideration, such as checking on elders, as well as feats of heroism, like a front loader carrying a family to safety in its bucket when the floodwaters were too deep for trucks. Senator Donnie Olson was impressed with how much care people showed for one another during the disaster. Now, he says, it's the state's turn.
So that's what I saw was very encouraging, how cooperative they worked together and how much they pulled together in this situation. And now we as a state need to go ahead and see what we can do to step up to the plate to make sure that those that are now homeless, have lost their homes, have got some place to go ahead in winter, because it's awfully cold with this wind that's here. They need some place to go ahead and where it's a shelter over themselves so that they got a place to stay for the winter.
Senator Olson was the first public official to visit Stebbins since last week's devastating storm. Governor Sean Parnell, after his stop in Kotlik last week, was brought in a 30-second flyover to see the damage in Stebbins from above, but did not land. Yesterday, the State of Alaska Trooper Nome Post celebrated the opening of its new location at the Nome, Alaska National Guard Building. After months of renovation, the state troopers moved into the structure from their previous location at Sitnasauk. The new site provides more office and storage space, and not having to share a building with other entities offers the security of monitoring personnel entering and exiting the building. The troopers are renting the space from the Alaska National Guard. This move of renovating state or federally owned structures for state use saves the state of Alaska money. The Kotzebue State Trooper Post held a similar ceremony this week. This relocation plan is being led by Alaska National Guard Brigadier General Leon Briggs, who was present at the celebration yesterday in Nome. The state of Alaska could be a lead investor for a potential liquefied natural gas pipeline spanning the state. The Department of Natural Resources has released a roadmap for getting a natural gas pipeline built, and it involves taking on multi-billion dollar ownership stake in the project. The gas line would stretch from the North Slope reserves down to the South Central Coast, and the report suggests that the state cover 20 to 30% of the project as an equity investment to generate more revenue. Because the project is expected to cost upwards of $45 billion, that would mean spending at least $9 billion. Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash supports the idea.
Owner state gets thrown around a lot. This would be a real opportunity to demonstrate that concept in spades.
Balash says that taking on some of the risk would improve the likelihood of the project, and it could make it easier to work alongside partners Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips. He adds that it could prevent a lot of the disagreements the state had with these companies over oil production.
A lot of the heartburn, a lot of the fights between the state of Alaska and industry were a consequence of that misalignment. And it could have been fixed right up front, and it wasn't. I think there's a lesson to be learned there, and we're no longer resource-rich and cash-poor. We're resource-rich and, frankly, cash-heavy.
Federal gas line regulators also see an equity investment making the project more appealing to North Slope producers. For years, state leaders have tried to advance an LNG project with the hope that exporting natural gas could generate state revenue as oil production in Alaska declines. That decline is already putting pressure on the Treasury, with the state in deficit spending mode for the first time in nearly a decade. The report, which was produced by the consulting company Black & Veatch, also looked at how changes to the state's fiscal structure could affect the viability of a gas line. The state's gas line structure is expected to be a topic of concern during the coming legislative session. The study determines that Alaska takes a higher-than-average portion of revenue from the natural gas with its current fiscal structure. According to Black & Veatch, the government take for comparable projects across the globe is in the 45 to 80% range. Government take in Alaska is between 70 and 85% when state and federal taxes are factored in. To get to a lower government take number, the report models scenarios where the production tax is lowered and where the royalty share is reduced. Balash says preserving current royalty levers is important to DNR. Balash says he will be relying on the report as the state sets its gas line policy. Lawmakers will get their first chance to review the report on Friday when it is presented to the House Resources Committee. And last night, the Nome Joint Utility Board met. John Handlin, utility manager, said Nome's final fuel delivery for the year arrived last month. The price, $3.40 a gallon, a 20-cent increase from last year. Responding to the price hike, NJUS requested a higher power cost equalization, or PCE, rate from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. The commission complied, and as a result, residential utility customers can expect a $5.75 PCE credit added to their November bill. That amount should equalize with next year's fuel surcharge. This fluctuation, Handlin says, is unusual.
Normally, we adjust the fuel surcharge at the same time that the PCE rate is changed so that the net effect is zero on somebody's bill. But they're actually going to see this credit show up a month in advance of the resulting rate change on their bill.
In short, customers should not see a change to their utility cost once the board balances their budget next month and kicks in the surcharge. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power released a report on the Pilgrim Hot Springs geothermal project. Though the crew vacated the hot springs at the end of October, researchers continue analyzing data collected from the site this fall. They're updating the conceptual model of the springs geothermal system, and they plan to return to Pilgrim Hot Springs midwinter to log water temperatures from the wells drilled this season. This week, trainers from Emergent Wind Technologies are teaching Nome's power plant crew how to operate and maintain the town's wind turbines. Though the power plant has a 5-year maintenance agreement with EWT, this instruction allows on-site personnel to run and repair the instruments. Since their installation in July, the Integrity wind turbines have generated over 900,000 kilowatts, a figure Handlin says that is right on schedule. Handlin also reminds citizens to turn on their circulating pumps and to double-check that the outlet supplying energy to the pump is outputting electricity.
Take a light over there and plug it in to make sure you actually have electricity in it. We did have a recent situation where somebody had a GFCI or GFI breaker that had been popped, and their circulating pump, although it was plugged into the wall, was not working. And if your pump is vibrating, it's probably going out and probably needs to be changed.
The utility board welcomed Pat Knodel, an electrician in town, as the newest addition to the board. Finally, Handlin reminds customers energy efficiency pamphlets are available at the NJUS office. And a look at the price of gold in New York at this hour. Gold is down $13.50 an ounce to $1,262.70 an ounce. Silver is down 17 cents an ounce to $20.27 an ounce. Zinc is at 84 cents a pound. It is unofficially 6 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 12 and a half minutes after 9 o'clock.